From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another edition of the Wildcast podcast. We are a part of the Arizona Daily Star, and we always tend to do live podcasts here at Frog and Firkin. It is Tuesday. I'm Justin Spears here with Dominic Pachaco and Bruce Pasco. And normally before every Arizona Wildcats home basketball game, we record a live podcast here at Frog and Firkin. No Arizona basketball this weekend. And there won't be Arizona basketball until what? When's the season opener for the 2019-2020 season?
Right, a blue game will be in October.
So October is when we'll be talking Arizona Wildcats basketball. No, we're still talking U of A hoops right now. Just a little preview of today's show, by the way. We're going to be talking U of A hoops. We're going to be talking Pac-12 in the NCAA tournament. And we're also going to be breaking down our favorites for March Madness. Do you have your brackets filled out? By the way, Dom, is yours officially filled out?
Not officially. I have one filled out, but it was just, you know, my preliminary run-through. So I do have one filled out, yes.
By the way, if you are listening to this podcast, you can listen to the full podcast on Tucson.com, the Wildcaster app, which you can download on the App Store and Google Play. It's free to download. So download, if you're at Frog and Firkin right now, if you're listening to this podcast, pull out your phone. Download the Wildcaster app, which is on the App Store and Google Play. It's free. You don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star. You can get wall-to-wall coverage on your Arizona Wildcats. And you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. So, guys, Bruce, I got to get your thoughts on this. Do you fill out brackets every year, or is that just kind of a thing that you're just like, kind of whatever?
No, absolutely.
It's got a whole pile of them.
But all I do is it's just my family, and honestly, I almost never win, so it just shows you. It's all a crapshoot.
It's luck every single year. Like, I've won once. I've came in last a bunch. Like, it's... As Bruce said, a crapshoot. Like, it's absolutely random.
But that's what makes March Madness great.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll be talking about our brackets coming up later on in the podcast. But, guys, let's talk some Arizona basketball. So, U of A, their season was cut short last week in the first round of the Pac-12 tournament. They lost in that 8-9 matchup to USC. And now Arizona, well, their season's over with. They're not going to the NIT. They're not having any postseason play.
They're not going to the CBI?
Not even the CBI. They are officially done for the 2019 season. But I got to get your opinion on this, guys. When you look back on this season as a whole, if somebody were to stop you on the street and be like, hey, Dom, hey, Bruce, if just summarize Arizona's season, where do you even begin? Where does one begin talking about Arizona basketball right now?
To me, it begins with last spring and how they only had 6 players, which goes back, of course, even further, the reasons for that. But just, you know, this was never meant to be a great team. It was impressive in some ways that it even was a team that didn't finish last. I mean, honestly, there were predictions late last March and April that picked Arizona last, and at that point, they probably had the worst team because they had nobody. So, you know, they just got by with what they had, and then they probably overachieved a little bit early and, you know, did pretty well for the first half, and then distractions hit and injuries hit in the second half, and then they were what they were.
Overachieved in what way, though?
They didn't have any injuries.
Yeah,
by wins. But that's also qualified by the fact they didn't have any injuries and they didn't have any off-court distractions at that point. So it was pretty smooth sailing for the most part. Then again, overall, they played pretty well in the Maui Invitational, and that really, you could actually argue that their season kind of peaked during that tournament.
Bruce, what was Arizona in the preseason poll? 4, 5? In the Pac-12 media poll?
4, yeah.
They're fourth.
Fourth?
I mean...
Yeah. Well, and even Miller said at the time, I'm surprised it was
generous.
That high. And I voted him 6th, and I was even picking him too high. So, yeah.
I think that was kind of... it definitely wasn't the floor. Is fourth in the Pac-12, was that the ceiling for Arizona this year? Because, like Bruce said...
The ceiling is the roof. Shout out to Michael Jordan.
The ceiling is the roof. Fourth in the Pac-12 was their roof. I don't see them realistically at any point. I don't know if anyone thought they'd finish higher than fourth. I mean, a first round bye, even as, you know, they went on the losing skid and all the, you know, turbulent runs they had in the Pac-12, I think a first round bye was attainable. I mean, until the very end. I think that was kind of until we hit that losing stretch, I think we kind of fell back on that, like, okay, well, they're losing games, but if they turn it around here, they can make a run and probably get a first round bye just because of how bad the Pac-12 was. And they could have. I mean, they were mathematically within reach in the last week, so theoretically they could have if they won a couple more games. But yeah. Fourth was pretty much the ceiling for this Arizona team. I think Gonzaga early in the year, that game kind of got everyone's hopes up. They played pretty well in Maui. I mean, they played two ranked teams.
Especially Coleman.
Yeah, they played two ranked teams, one of the best teams in the country in Gonzaga, who's now a one seed. So, and played both of them pretty well, Gonzaga and Auburn. So. And then the Iowa State game, that was in Maui. So their best win came in Maui, and two of their best losses came in Maui. And I think that kind of got everyone's hype up, especially after what happened in the Bahamas a season ago when they were swept. And obviously Maui wasn't the outlook they were looking for. I mean, they only won a game. But it was a lot more positive feeling coming out of Maui this year than it was the Bahamas last year. And they didn't have DeAndre Ayton this year, so obviously they weren't going to be able to attain the level that they were playing at when they almost beat Gonzaga. Mm-hmm.
And plus, you also have to put in injuries. You know, Arizona wasn't the same after Chase Jeter had that back injury against Oregon State because they didn't have any presence inside. And then Brandon Williams goes missing for that stretch when they were losing games. And I just felt like Arizona, they didn't have any sort of consistency all season long. And that's one thing that teams always try to strive for if you're trying to make the NCAA tournament, is that you have to have consistency all year long. Even look at last year with Arizona's team when they had DeAndre Ayton. What was the downfall? What was the worst part of the year? But the Bahamas? And then after that point, I think they had some sort of consistency, right?
Well,
to the point where they were one of the hottest teams coming out of the Pac-12 entering the NCAA tournament.
I think the one thing more important than consistency, and you're not wrong, Justin, you need that throughout the season if you're going to be a real contender, but look at Oregon. I think the more important part when you talk about March Madness and the NCAA tournament is getting hot at the right moment. And yeah, Arizona down the stretch couldn't do that because, like you guys said, they were banged up. They didn't have Chase Jeter. They didn't have Brandon Williams. And it was tough to hit any kind of stride with the little talent they had. It was they already had a depleted roster talent-wise, and then they had injuries to worry about, and they were even more depleted. So it was just hard for them to get on a run. And, I mean, they were never getting hot, especially at the end of the year when they were missing two of their best players.
Yeah, and I think the off-court stuff is always more of a factor than people talk about because he doesn't like to talk about it. So
no comment.
Some people don't talk about it, but it's a factor. You lose a guy off your bench that's, you know, a guy that you turn to a lot, just like last year with Book Richardson. They didn't have that to turn to. And, you know, maybe the subpoena thing maybe affected a little bit, too, because there was just some tension with Sean Miller as well as that. But who knows? But it came on top of those injuries, and it certainly wasn't helpful.
You saw it last year in the form of the Buffalo loss, who is now a 16 in the tournament. I mean, the cloud didn't really hit him last year until the NCAA tournament. And whether or not that was a byproduct of everything that was going on outside the program, we don't know. But it's sure something to point a finger at for the reason they got blown out by Buffalo in the tournament. Can we talk about another thing? Can we go back to January? If we're looking for things to pin this poor season on, early January, Manuel Aycott left, transferred, or left the program, is now transferring, whatever you want to call it. And nobody really batted an eye in the fan base and everyone around the program. Everyone was pretty chill with it. And they went 4-11 after that. I'm not saying they're a different team and they're in the tournament and winning the Pac-12 with Emmanuel Aycott, but there's certainly something to say for that.
There's bodies there.
There's bodies.
Well,
I mean,
there's
with
a
the
little
injuries,
bit of depth.
Combined with the injuries, right, it did make a difference. When he first quit, I didn't think it would make that much of a difference, but everybody was healthy at that point.
Right.
No, and, yeah, okay,
and it
yeah,
helped him depth-wise and defensively. I mean, he was starting and averaging 3.8 points or something, so it wasn't that, but
right,
definitely having a capable body in there hurt him.
And nobody batted an eye, like you said, because Arizona was Arizona's tied for first place in the Pac-12 at that time. Mm-hmm. They were coming back from the road trip, the Bay Area. Yeah. They were 4-0 in the conference. Everybody's like, "Oh, look at Arizona basketball surprising people."
Is that the last road trip they swept?
I believe so. Yeah.
The only one? Yeah,
I think
the only road trip
that was the only road trip that they swept. Yeah. But, I mean, hindsight, you look back on it and you're like, wow, they could have used Emmanuel Aycott. I mean, listen, like Bruce said, he averaged 3 points
when he was
as a starter. It wasn't that big of a difference, but when you look at depth, especially when Chase Jeter was out, when even Brandon Williams was out, you have that kind of utility player that you can move them around multiple positions. And, yeah, I think it really impacted Arizona.
I think, it would have helped solely for depth because instead of guys like, and maybe it's a bad example, I'm just thinking of guys that came off the bench in situations where they normally wouldn't. Like Alex Barcelo started getting more minutes down the stretch. Just guys like that. I mean, the deeper Arizona went, the less talented that they got. I mean, Jake Desjardins played a lot, and he was a walk-on a year ago.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm being too liberal with the term a lot. I mean, he played. He got minutes, and those are minutes that Emmanuel Aycott would have had.
He played more than the previous years.
Right. And just that talent drop-off. I mean, Emmanuel Aycott is at least he's physically talented. I mean, Arizona brought him in as a pretty highly rated recruit. So, a little bit more development. Who knows what he could have been. But, yeah, I mean, more than anything, it would have been nice for Arizona to have him for depth.
Yeah, just a total head scratcher. Mm-hmm. The guy would quit a team and stay on campus. I mean, it just means he must have been really unhappy and or had people around him telling him he wasn't working out for him, wasn't playing the right role, which is what we're hearing. But, just one of those things. And it does make you wonder in retrospect now, did that suggest something else was going on? Maybe things unraveling in some form with the team off the court. I don't know, but that is certainly when you look back on it when things started going wrong. But then again, the schedule turned a lot harder and you had injuries, and then you had the Phelps thing after that. So it's kind of like one thing after another just clobbered them.
The good, we should talk about the good of Arizona basketball this year. Ira Lee is going to be a presence inside. I think Arizona needs to use him a lot more than they did this year. I think he will be a big piece, regardless of who comes in, who leaves next year. You know, we don't know about Chase Jeter and all these grad students. Their situation is all up in the air still. But Ira Lee, I think, is going to get big minutes next year. And I think I said it earlier in the Pac-12 tournament, he's probably the most physical guy they've had inside all year. I mean, he impresses me a lot more than Chase Jeter. He's aggressive. He goes after rebounds.
He's a pit bull.
I mean, he's just tough inside, and he's developing. He's young. He's not a one-and-done guy, obviously. He's here for a second year, but he's not that type of talent. He's kind of a guy where he's going to be here 3 or 4 years, and he's going to have to develop. But seeing the progress he made from freshman year to sophomore year, I know it was kind of understated a lot because he got into foul trouble, and he has his own issues on the court, obviously, but his potential that we've seen this year, just a couple plays. There was one in the Pac-12 tournament against USC. There was a rebound inside. There was a steal. They came down the court. Chase Jeter was trailing. Ira Lee was trailing even further behind. A lousy three-point shot from Dylan Smith went up, and Chase Jeter got boxed out by a guy pretty easily. And Ira Lee went around everybody in the paint, got the rebound, and had that dunk. I don't know. It was Ira Lee's big dunk, if you remember it, against USC. And it's just that kind of physicality that Arizona needs inside. They've been missing for a little bit. And I expect big things from Ira Lee. If you're looking for positives of the 2018-19 season, I think Ira Lee is the positive takeaway. I mean,
in my opinion, I think that for next season, it probably won't happen.
Right.
But I honestly think Ira Lee is going to be Arizona's starting power forward next season. Bruce, what do you think about that?
Well, it depends on if they recruit a grad transfer, like a Ryan Luther type of player. It's possible that person might start, because if you're getting a grad transfer, you're pretty much assuring him he's going to play a key role, and that could happen. But as of right now, yeah, sure. I mean, he is basically. Mm-hmm. He's been starting for 5 of the last 7 games, I think, towards the end of the year. And he's, what Dom said is true. I think he's also, just the thing that's impressed me is that he's playing more carefully, and not because he's such a bulldog sometimes, that old bull in China shop thing where
he's got football genes.
and he said basically, I think was it I don't remember what it was, I think it was maybe after the Pac-12 tournament, he was saying how his dad used to talk to him about it just matters playing hard, going all out, and his dad was a a scrapper who, you know, hooked on with the Raiders for a while and played in the Arena League, and just kind of like a guy who had to fight and claw to get on teams, and you see that with his son. So, but saying all that, he's been careful not to foul as mm-hmm. much, and not to turn over, not be quite as out of control, and that's what's impressed me. Just you know, bringing that within a structure that works. And
what does his skill set remind you guys of? I've tried to pinpoint like any past U of A player or past NBA player. I look at him as a not as athletic version of Blake Griffin. Like he's athletic, he rebounds, and he works close to the basket, yeah. But he has no mid-range jump shot, and he's not nearly right. as athletic as Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
I kind of see a little bit of Julius Randle in him. Mm-hmm. Julius okay. Randle was like kind of a pit bull, an undersized big who was very aggressive.
Also one of the best players in the country.
At that time. So we'll say a watered-down version of Julius Randle. But yeah, those were kind of two guys that I thought of.
His skill set, I mean, he can't do much outside of the paint. And again, that's not a knock on him because he's really physical inside. I just think that's what suits him well. That's where he is right now until he develops more. It's not like he's that good of a shooter outside the paint. He can't step back and hit shots. I was thinking of Arizona players in the past who are kind of the physical presence inside. Ryan Anderson kind of comes to me, but even he could shoot. Like he was really yeah. physical inside, but he could step back and shoot a little bit, which yeah. I really can't do really consistently. So
maybe more like Jesse Perry, if anybody remembers
Jesse
him.
Perry.
Jesse Perry. And then if you go way back, if you go way back, you can make an argument, Michael Wright, maybe.
Yeah,
you know that kind
I like
of
that a lot.
Bulldog around the basket, but didn't have a lot of range. Mm-hmm.
So guys, the outlook for Arizona next season. We talked about Ira Lee. Brandon Williams indicated that he was ready to come back and work in the same backcourt with Nico Mannion. What do you guys think about next season? If all the recruits stay, again, we'll know all the answers coming up here in the month of April. But let's just say all the recruits stay, and Arizona has a current cast now. I'm more interested in seeing guys like Alex Barcelo, what's going to happen with him, Dylan Smith, Brandon Randolph. Where are their minds at right now? And honestly, I have no idea. We asked them in Las Vegas about Brandon Randolph. It's like, well,
they may not be back.
Yeah, and that's the thing is there are only so many scholarships.
They have more freedom than the recruits do. The recruits, four of the five recruits, are signed to letters of intent. So as of right now, they're coming. It's the guys who are on the current team that have a lot of options, especially Chase Jeter and Dylan Smith, who graduated, can go as grad transfers if they want, and Jeter could even take a gamble on pro basketball somewhere. And these guys have a lot of options. And Brandon Randolph, too. There's been talk about him.
Yeah. It's all predicated on whether or not Sean Miller returns. If he's the coach next year and all the recruits are here, there's not a ton of playing time to go around for guys like Brandon Randolph, Dylan Smith. Alex Barcelo is probably going to fade off into the night. They have a lot of talent coming in next year, and a lot of talent that are going to play a lot of minutes right out of the gate. You're going to have some starters. Nico Mannion could be one of them. I mean, they realistically, any of the five recruits that they have coming in could start, maybe with the exception of Coloco. Terry Armstrong, Josh Green, and Nico Mannion all could theoretically start. I mean, they're all talented enough to start, or if not start, they're going to play valuable minutes down the stretch.
But if Arizona doesn't get a graduate transfer big man, Chase Jeter's gone, Coloco, you have to look at Coloco and be like, all right, man, you got to get baptized by fire, as they say.
Yeah, that wouldn't be the ideal thing. He's a good long-term prospect.
Well, and Sean, it's a project.
Right, and Sean Miller has said that he's looking to add, Bruce, at least one more guy, two more guys in the offseason. So so he's running under the assumption, obviously he knows more than we do, he's running under the assumption that someone is going to leave. At least another guy on Arizona's roster right now for next season is going to leave. Jake Desjardins is on scholarship, which was awarded to him last year. We don't know if they're going to revoke his scholarship. That frees up another space.
Well, even with Jake going back to walk
they're
on, they're full right now.
Yeah.
They're one over with him as a scholarship player, and he's saying he guarantees he's going to get one and probably two or possibly two. So, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, that means he's expecting two guys to leave.
So there's going to be some turnover. Someone's going to leave who's not a senior. So That's going to be
who's it going to be?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. There's just so much up in the air right now. I mean, we can talk about all the guys coming in. I think that's really the fun part because would you say, and Bruce, you could probably speak to this better than anyone, which recruiting class is better? I know they were both ranked number one in the country. Would you say this season's class coming in 2019 is, or the DeAndre Ayton class?
That's a great question because there's, I mean,
you have the prize recruit.
You could say you could say any recruiting class that counts, DeAndre Ayton is the best ever.
Yeah.
I mean, he was that good.
Yeah.
That said, this you have really probably two really 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 top shelf guys that are ready to come in, and Green and Manning, and then you know, from every indication, Terry Armstrong is at least a Devonier Dutrieve kind of Dutrieve kind of player on the wing, where he's going to be really good and develop. And then Zeke Nnaji, I've heard good things about. I've only seen him a little bit. You know, if he does, he's the one guy who has not signed. If he does show up, I think he's got potential to play a pretty key role right away too. So maybe, you know, if you're talking about depth and all that, maybe argue that class a little better. But again, it's hard to argue against any class with Ayton.
Quantity and quality.
Ayton's class had, you know, had Ira Lee in it and Barcelo and, you know, some,
Acott.
You know,
is there more one and done potential in this class? People are huge on Nico Mannion, and it's easy to see why. But Nico Mannion's not an NBA player after next year, I don't think. Josh Green, maybe I could see. I mean, he's kind of got that build for an NBA player. Terry Armstrong, probably not. He's probably a 2-year guy. Again, it depends on a lot. But out of the gate, do you think there are as many or more one and done guys in this class?
Well, it's hard to say in this day and age because everybody thinks they're one and done, and now they have options. You know, they can go. Those two guys, no, they wouldn't be ready after a year. But if they want to go sign a 2-way contract or something, or they could leave. So who knows? But you know, in the way you think about it normally, yeah, you'd think both those guys are probably 2-year guys, and maybe Armstrong will be 3 and Coloco 4. But in this day and age, all 4 of them could leave after 1 year. Who knows? That's
look, great. I know everyone listening to this podcast right now, all they care about is that they do good in the 1 year that they're here, if they are one of them. So, which, you know, again, Sean Lehrer's going to have the talent. If everything goes right for Arizona, they got a lot of talent coming in, so it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Let's shift gears over into NCAA tournament. 3 Pac-12 teams got in. Washington, they are the 8th seed, taking on number 9 Utah State, or might be flipped around, I'm not sure. And then you also have Oregon, who is a 12 seed. ASU, they're playing in that play-in game against St. John's for the 11 seed. Winner gets, Buffalo, the team that beat Arizona last season in the first round of the tournament, and Bobby Hurley's old team. Did you expect the Pac-12 to get 3 teams in the NCAA tournament? The way it was looking when I was watching the selection show, seeing Belmont and Temple get in and them playing against each other
in
that
playing
game, I was like, there's no way ASU is getting in. And then in that last bracket that they revealed, that last region, ASU is in that playing game. I was surprised. Guys, what do you think about the Conference of Champions getting 3 teams in the tournament?
I wasn't too surprised after Oregon won the tournament. I mean, Washington was pretty much a lock at the time. I think Oregon had to win or have a lot more happen to get in if they had lost that Pac-12 game. So they had to win. They did. Washington was already in, and ASU was kind of that third team where, hey, they should be in, but if Oregon wins, they could just steal ASU's bid. And I think ASU deserve, honestly, I think they're more talented than Oregon and Washington both. So I think they deserve to be in. If you had asked me this the night before Selection Sunday, I probably would have said they were going to be on the outside looking in as one of the first 4 out. But I wouldn't say they didn't deserve it. I think it's surprising that there's 3 Pac-12 teams in, under the sense that the Pac-12 is terrible. I mean, how there are 3 teams in this conference is hard to believe, but I mean, it's because of Oregon. I mean, the way it happened is pretty clear.
Well, that's exactly right. It played out the way it had to happen, and it shows you that is whatever you think about a conference is not about the conference when it comes to Selection Sunday. It's about individual teams. The committee doesn't look at it and say, well, this team stinks or this league stinks. We're only letting two in. They don't think like that.
Right.
They think Washington and ASU are in, and then, Oregon took one from somebody. We don't know who that was, but somebody lost a bid. I actually thought Oregon might have had an argument as an at-large if they had lost to Washington, but the fact that they were seeded 12th would indicate they didn't. But again, it played out right, and I think ASU got the bid because of their outliers. At the end of the day, mm-hmm. The committee looks at those outliers. Who are your best wins? Who are your worst losses? They had a terrible loss at home to Princeton, but they beat Kansas. They beat Mississippi State. They played pretty well. They finished second in the Pac-12 and had some good wins there. So I think that's why they got in.
Which team out of the three teams is destined, or what do you think, or how do you think the Pac-12 teams will shape up? I look at Oregon. Mm-hmm. They won six in a row before the Pac-12 tournament, correct? And then they win four in a row. So they're riding with a 10-game win streak heading into the NCAA tournament. And as we all know, it's all about the hottest team at that point. But then I can counter that argument because Arizona last year was one of the hottest teams in the country. Everybody had Arizona at least going to the Elite Eight. Yeah. In the NCAA tournament, because DeAndre Ayton, the best player in college basketball. So you, sometimes it's not all about having that streak or playing in the fifth gear at that moment in March.
Yeah, Arizona's streak last year was a little bit deceptive. They played really well in the Pac-12 tournament, basically because DeAndre Ayton just went insane. He just went crazy. Nobody could deal with him. They lost, and they also had the Bay Area weekend at home. Easy weekend at home entering the tournament. But the week before that, they went to Oregon. That was a messy off-court situation, but they needed overtime to beat Oregon State, and then they lost to I don't know if it was overtime, but it was I think it was. I think both those games were, and then they lost to Oregon. I think Oregon this year is clearly the hot team. They're a trendy pick. I mean, I think they could get to the Sweet 16 where they're at. The question is, are they exhaling at this point, saying, we did it, we're in? If they do and they relax a little bit, that could hurt them. They need to keep an edge.
The one thing with Oregon, it's a tough first-round matchup. It's a tough game to pick because I like Oregon a lot, too. They're hot. That's what matters in March. But they're playing Wisconsin. They're playing Wisconsin. And Arizona knows the pain Wisconsin can bring in the NCAA tournament. They made six out of the last seven Sweet 16s when they're there. And, Wisconsin's a tough team to bet against in March. They're one of those teams who just find ways to win. I don't care if you're the hottest team in college basketball. They find ways to beat you. And it's a tough first-round game for Oregon. But if they get past that, they can absolutely make a run in the Sweet 16. And, they'd have Kansas State or Irvine being a popular upset pick in the first round. So Oregon has, they don't have the hardest path to the Sweet 16 where they would meet Virginia. But it's they just got to get past Wisconsin. That's that's always the tough one, isn't it?
No biggie.
I also think geography is a big factor here. Playing in San Jose is huge for Oregon. Yeah. They have a lot of alums that live in the Bay Area, and if anybody wants to drive down from Eugene, it's like what 6-7 hours, something like that. It's not impossible. They probably should have a pretty good crowd there, and they've generated a lot of excitement the way they've been playing the last few weeks. So. That could help them too. Whereas Wisconsin has people everywhere, so they'll have some fans. But I got to think it'd be more pro Oregon on Friday, and then the local fans will probably pull for Oregon anyway.
I have the Oregon Ducks going to the Elite Eight in my bracket. I actually have
Virginia?
Them upsetting Virginia in the Sweet 16.
Hey, Virginia's
I'm
been known to
regret
lose.
It later on, but
Virginia's been known to lose to double digit seeds.
Hey,
16.
You're not wrong. I got Oregon going to the Elite Eight and then losing to Tennessee.
If we're looking at teams who can make a run, which Pac-12 team is most likely to make a run? You could pretty much take Washington out of that running. They have a difficult first round game against Utah State, and then they would play
North Carolina.
Then they play UNC.
Yeah,
so you could, that 8-9 matchup is tough for a team like Washington, who probably got a poor end of a draw there. If they'd won the Pac-12, obviously they wouldn't have been matched up with one seed in the second round. But that's tough. Yeah. I like Oregon, but it's tough to pick them against Wisconsin, so I can't have Oregon, although I do get them going to at least a Sweet 16. I don't know about the Elite Eight, Justin, but you look at I like ASU. I like ASU's road a lot. They play St. John's in the first round. That should be a win for ASU, and then they play Bobby Hurley's old team in Buffalo in what would be the first round, second round, whatever you want to call it, the round of 64. They'd play Buffalo, and I think that's a good game for ASU. They're, again, I've talked about it all year. I don't need to say it again. They're talented, and, you know, they'd play Texas Tech in the second round then if they were to beat Buffalo. They get Texas Tech in the round of 32. That's a tough game for them. But this ASU team's talented. They can get hot. That's maybe the difference between them now that I think about it, between them and Oregon. I think Oregon can get hotter, but I think ASU's more a better team, if that makes sense. Again, it's March. It just depends who can get hot.
But the problem is ASU is up and down. They're really good, yeah. And then they have an off day, and then right. They're really good for a couple games, and they're off. So I don't see them making a run for that reason. Maybe they can get through the couple of games. But
I have them beating St. John's.
That's it.
And then losing to Buffalo.
Yeah, which, hey, that could happen, too, and Arizona knows the pain of that Buffalo can bring in the NCAA tournament.
Well, that'll be a crazy deal, too, yeah, because of Bobby Hurley.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah. That'd be awesome. And Buffalo, what, they're 32-4 this year, won the conference tournament again. So Buffalo's legit. They're ranked. Yeah, they're ranked in the top 25 for most of the year. They have that six seed. So absolutely not an easy game for ASU. But if we're looking at first round upsets, that might be my favorite just because I don't want to bet against Wisconsin. I've been burned there a couple times in the past. But hey, can we talk about teams we have going far that shouldn't go far? Dark horses, Cinderellas. Bruce, I'm looking at your bracket. You have one that I have thought a lot about in the first round. You have Yale winning a game. Do I see that correctly?
I have them winning two games.
So
Yale going to the Sweet 16.
There's a popular pick. They play LSU. We all know Will Wade was suspended in the wake of ESPN's report of wiretap. So they're on their interim head coach right now and lost a game to Florida in the SEC. So they're vulnerable when they're at full health and full strength and they have their coach. They're a different team, but they're playing through some adversity right now. Yale's a trendy pick in the first round, and I like it.
Yeah, they are. And I mean, they've got a pretty good defensive scheme from what I've read about them. I haven't seen them play, honestly, but I've read a lot. I thought, what the heck? I think LSU, that's going to be a tough situation, and as it's shown in their conference tournament. What they're up against.
Justin, I know you're Cinderella.
Wofford?
Wofford.
No, I unfortunately.
Oh, did you back Wofford out of Terriers, Wofford?
Yeah, no. I originally predicted the Wofford Terriers to go to the Elite Eight, and then I saw the matchup.
Yeah.
They would have to play Kentucky in that second round. So I actually have them beating Seton Hall in the first round, but then they're going to get smacked by Kentucky in the second round.
Yeah, Kentucky's a tough draw.
So my Cinderella team.
Well, it was Oregon.
Well, yeah, I guess you could say Oregon. I had them going to the Elite Eight. But Murray State. I like John Morant. I actually have Murray State going to the Sweet 16 and then eventually losing.
I was going to bring up Murray State because we talked about DeAndre Ayton last year and why Arizona was highly picked to make a run in the NCAA tournament because they had the best player in the country in DeAndre Ayton. You can say the same thing about Murray State. They have one of the best scorers you've seen in a long time from out of college, averaging 24 points a game this year. He just goes off every single night. So John Morant can absolutely carry Murray State to some wins. He's one of those guys where, very much like DeAndre Ayton a season ago, he can carry a team in March. And if he gets hot, Murray State's going to win some games. They get Marquette in the first round, who's played some good games. They're well coached. But I don't know, Murray State, it's tough to bet against John Morant right now. If you're betting against dudes in the NCAA tournament, guys who are on fire, single players, John Morant's got to be up there.
Morant versus Marcus Howard's going to be good.
There's been so much talk about him and that team, and Wofford for that matter, too. I just wonder sometimes.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it seems, the Cinderellas are usually teams that nobody's talking about during the tournament, so we're probably not talking about whoever
it's like
that is.
Make Old Dominion.
Or Colgate.
Yeah. At Colgate, Tennessee, first round. That's the thing with this bracket, too, is it's more chalk than in seasons prior, where I like a lot of the higher, lower seeds, however you want to say it, the higher-ranked teams. I like a lot of them making runs this year. I don't know if there's going to be a ton of upsets, maybe some first rounds, but like Bruce said, I don't know if we're going to be able to sit here and accurately predict which double-digit seeds are going to make a run. But I don't know if there are going to be that many this year, just because the top dogs are so good this year in Duke, UNC, Kentucky. You can even throw Virginia in there. A lot of people have them going to the Final Four, breaking through after the struggles they've had the last few seasons as a highly seeded team. I don't know. I think the top teams, again, you're always going to have upsets in the first round. but I don't see any Loyola Marymounts or you know, Kansas States who came out a year ago as high seeds making runs.
Unfortunately, we got to go. But guys, real quick, who are your national champions on your brackets?
I have Duke because unless Zion Williams busts another shoe, it's hard to bet against.
Yeah, you can't bet against Duke. I like Duke over UNC.
Battle Tobacco Road,
a fourth four. Game. That'd be so fun.
I love it. I'm here for it. I got that as my national championship as well. Well, that will do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Best of luck to everybody this March filling out your bracket. You can listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Make sure you hit that little purple button that says subscribe. And also check out this podcast on Tucson.com. And make sure you download the Wildcaster app, which is available on the App Store and Google Play. For Bruce, for Dom, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Wildcaster fans. Come check out The Point Being, the Arizona Daily Star's opinion page podcast. We talk about current events, what's going on in the world, the letters page, and more. So check us out at thepointbeingpodcast.com. Check us out at thepointbeingpodcast.com. Check us out at